Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Elevate your bedroom with our fresh new bedding designs and colours. In-store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551. By the way, that collision that is featuring now in all the news bulletins, it's off Grimsby in the UK. It's between two ships, the Senna Immaculate and the Solong. One is an oil tanker and the other is a cargo ship. 32 casualties so far, and have been brought ashore in Grimsby. And I suppose the most spectacular aspect of it at the minute is the footage of this, what one newspaper is describing as a massive fireball after the collision, which happened just before 10 o'clock this morning. So let's hope everyone escapes safe and sound, and nobody wants to hear about an oil tanker involved in a collision. David, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Sorry to start on more grim news, but we do live in grim, grim times.
And yes, we do.
Yeah, and this song called The Eve of Destruction,
yeah,
was number one 60 years ago. Number one in the UK, number one in the USA. It got to number two here in Ireland, David, and it was beaten by the Rolling Stones' We Can't Get No Satisfaction. It was performed by a chap called Barry Maguire, and I heard it yesterday, and people are saying, God, this could be speaking about today. So would you tell us about the song, David? Because effectively you're going to introduce it to our listeners.
No, that wasn't quite what I was expecting to say.
Okay.
I remember the song. I wouldn't say that I know it very well.
Okay.
But if I recall, he's pretty much talking about the potential for Armageddon.
Yeah, yeah.
And I suppose in 1965, it would have been, 2 years after the Cuban Missile Crisis?
Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't around, so I don't remember. My recollection of the lyrics is that they were fairly direct.
Yeah, they sure were.
I didn't hear it yesterday, so I can't say I got a refresher. Well, course,
I heard it yesterday, and of all places, Sunshine Radio, and they were playing, which is a great day, but they were playing The Eve of Destruction, and that we play it now. The Eastern world that is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? But even the Jordan River has bodies floating. Tell me over and over again, my friend, how you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say, the fears I'm feeling today? If the button is pushed, there's no running away. There'll be no one to save with the world in a grave. Then look around, it's bound to scare you. We're on the eve of destruction. My blood's so mad, it feels like coagulating. I'm sitting here just contemplating. I can't twist the truth. It knows no regulation. Handful of senators don't pass legislation, and marches alone can't bring integration. When human respect is disintegrating, the whole crazy world, David, is just too frustrating. We're on the eve of destruction. And you think of all the hate there is in Red China, then take a look around at Selma, Alabama. You know what that's about, David. And when you return,
it's
the same old place. The pounding of the drums, the pride and disgrace. You can bury your head. Wow. You can bury your head, but don't leave a trace. Hate your next door neighbour, but don't forget to say grace. You may leave here for 4 days into space, but when you return, it's the same old place. Here's a song that was number one in September 1965 across the world, and is it as relevant today as it was then? Just listen to these words. Wow, David, are you still there?
It's funny, you know, Joe, I've probably heard that song 20 times in my lifetime, maybe more.
Yeah,
I've never really listened to all of the words. I've listened to some of it, got the gist of it, but never listened to the whole thing And as carefully, and particularly as you had read it out just before you played June.
Yes, my blood. So, just what does this say in people's head today? 60 years later after it was written. Yes, my blood's so mad, it feels like coagulating. I'm sitting here just contemplating. I can't twist the truth. It knows no regulation. A handful of senators don't pass legislation. And marches alone can bring integration when human respect is disintegrating. The whole crazy world is just too frustrating. Syria, Gaza, Ukraine, Somalia, North Korea, Iran only in the last few days being threatened if they don't do something about their nuclear program. Trump says he will hit them.
And I'm not sufficiently well informed, but I think there's quite a lot of difficult stuff going on in Central Africa.
Yeah, Somalia, for example. Yeah, and Congo, Rwanda.
Yes. Chad and places like that.
Yeah.
But the world is full of nasty stuff going on, you know.
But there's an awful lot of it at the minute. I'm just saying, our people, I'm asking the question, why does, well, it resonated with me. I suspect from what you're saying, the song resonated with you when you listened to the lyrics. The foreign minister of Poland said on Saturday, for example, after the Russians bombarded Ukraine again on Friday night and Thursday night, while these so-called peace negotiations, the foreign minister of Poland said, this is the result of appeasing barbarians. Now, remember the last time that phrase was used, barbarians, well, it's a number of occasions. We do live in anxious times, David.
We do live in anxious times. There's no question about it. I think the point that I was actually texting about was you had some calls concerned about the
children
song and the impact it had on children.
Yes.
And the point I made was, it's difficult, but we need to hear this. We don't, it's not in our interest to bury our heads in the sand because we don't like
it's a pity.
Maybe a little bit of terror mightn't do us any harm. It might get us to do something.
But is it not? Do you not find in this age of anxiety that we live in that people are inclined to try and, not deliberately now, but they skip the horrible pictures on the news? They've been going on for some, they are so unbearable. I don't know whether you saw the other day the UN representative for Gaza and the West Bank, and he was in tears on one channel. He was being asked, did you visit and what was it like? He said, I knew it was going to be bad. I've been around. That's my job. I've never seen anything as bad in all my living life. And then we have the other news at the weekend. No gas into Gaza, no electricity into Gaza, no water into Gaza. And as I say, Iran, Syria now exploding, horrific sectarian murders to such an extent that when the reports came on Morning Ireland, and I think the 1 o'clock yesterday, they had to give a health warning beforehand on radio about the scenes they were about to describe in Syria.
I missed out the news the last couple of days. I was kind of tied up with other things, and I was only hearing this lunchtime about the latest violence in Syria.
Stay there, David, please. We'll get a better line. We're talking about are we in the age of anxiety, and what can we do about it? Some people say our location, an island off the European coast, our location helps us. We're not Poland. We're not Estonia, Latvia, Finland, Lithuania, Sweden, Moldova. The other side of the world, go to China, the threat play, go to the middle and Iran, go to the continent of Africa, as David said. Are we living in the age of anxiety, as predicted 60 years ago in that song, which was number one? Ken Turner, Ken, good afternoon. Do you know the song, The Eve of Destruction, before we say anything else?
I do, Joe. Yeah. I'm old enough to be around for when it was a hit. And it reminded me of another apocalyptic song around the same time called 2525. Do you remember that?
Yeah, in the year 2525, yeah.
Yeah, by Yeager and Evans. And a lot of the stuff in the song has actually arrived in 2525.
Well, yeah, we're not there yet. We're in 2024. We're in 2025.
Well, it,
we've another 5. We've another 5. No, I take your point. In the year 25, but God, this is much more apocalyptic now. Ken, I take your point. In the year 2525, if man is still alive, if woman can't survive, they may find. In the year 3535, you ain't going to need to tell the truth, tell no lie. Everything you think, do and say is in the pill you took today. Do we live in the age of anxiety, Ken? Would you worry, or would you find yourself, one, trying to protect others from the news, or in insulating yourself against aspects of the news?
Joe, I'm an old guy now, and I certainly wouldn't worry about myself personally, but I worry about what's coming with my grandchildren, what kind of a world is going to be when I'm long gone and they're trying to, you know, cope with all the things that are going to happen. That worries me.
Would you worry, Ken, would you worry about nuclear war? Given what Macron said the other day, he wants the French nuclear umbrella to become the European nuclear umbrella, which means, well, NATO already have a nuclear umbrella. Russia have a nuclear umbrella. They don't have they have an economy the size of Italy, but they have an army and weapons multiple times of that, including nuclear weapons. North Korea, nuclear weapons. He's always threatening to bang them off. Israel have nuclear weapons. Iran is in the middle, we're told. Well, according to Donald Trump, and indeed, in fairness, his predecessors, are developing a nuclear program.
It's probably the most dangerous time because we have an unpredictable man in charge of the most powerful country in the world.
When you're talking, surely you're referring to Putin. If anyone's unpredictable, it's Putin. If anyone's unpredictable, it's Kim Il-sung. If anyone is unpredictable, it'll be times as the Ayatollahs. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
No, I thought David is back. David.
Yeah, I think the other caller there is referring to Mr. Trump.
Yeah, Ken.
He's the unpredictable one.
Yeah, but what about...
He's approaching the world in a completely different way than any of us have experienced over the last 40, 60 years. Putin, in fairness to him, much and all as you might dislike him and you think he's an asshole, but he has been pretty consistent in what he's been saying for at least the last 10 or 12 years.
Yeah. But we all, did we not think... that the fall of the wall in 1989 was, in the words of one famous book at the time, the end of history. And we saw the collapse of the Soviet Union. We thought that Stalinist, that expansionist, that threatening Cold War standoff between the USA and Soviet Union with the advent of Gorbachev and Yeltsin and then back again. We thought that was gone, but it's back now. It's back.
Yes, we did, and it is back.
Even
more so now, because you now have the United States under Mr. Trump are pretty clearly standing up and saying, don't mess with us. And who was it said something about walk tall and carry a big stick? Well, I tell you, Mr. Trump is getting out his big stick.
Yeah, and you don't.
But it's not necessarily military, though. He's using lots of other different tools that he thinks he has in his arsenal.
But you have to be harder on Trump, on Putin. Everyone's hard on Trump.
Absolutely.
No election.
The point I'm making is that he's not predictable. He's completely predictable in what he's doing.
Yeah, okay. Stay with us. Larkin is there. Larkin, and you're right, Larkin. It's not mentioned in Barry's song, which became number one 60 years ago, The Eve of Destruction. This, the big elephant in the room today, is what you're going to say, Larkin, isn't it?
Well, there's two elephants, and one is nuclear war, the other is climate change.
Now, nuclear war was there in 63. Climate change wasn't mentioned in the song, but you're right.
Yeah, so I guess we're in a more serious place than we were in the 60s, but we don't want to acknowledge it.
You went to the Soviet Union.
In the 80s.
Tell us.
I was I was concerned about nuclear war.
Yeah, yeah.
With a few people, I organized a show called The Artist's Bomb.
Right.
And I went over to Soviet Union and I asked them to allow Soviet artists contribute work to that. And it was shown in what's now the Royal Hospital.
And what was your impression of the Soviet Union then, Lorcan?
It was a pretty grim place. I can remember I was being brought around by this lady. Her job was, she was over all the exhibitions that came into Moscow.
Okay.
And one day when we were crossing the street, there was, I noticed everyone waited for traffic lights to change.
Okay.
And when everyone waited, they'd all chat to each other. And I thought, oh, they're all very friendly.
All right.
So I asked the woman, Natalia was her name. I said, what do you guys talk about? And she said, oh, where there's food.
Oh, where they can get food at that particular time.
Yeah, what shops for food.
Yes, yes.
And at that time, I went into the, what's now the celebrated gum department store. In Red Square, and there was nothing in it. But it's a completely different society now.
In what way?
And it's affluent.
Is it that affluent?
I guess the main characteristic around the world now is the huge division of wealth.
Okay.
So you have a very small percentage all over the world that are incredibly wealthy, and then a dwindling middle class and increased poverty. So if we've learned anything from the French Revolution, that's the whole structure you need to have a revolution.
But is it not fair to say that relative poverty today, the Ireland of 1963 and 1973, Still had tenements. I know the argument, but there were rat-infested tenements. Is it not fair to say that relatively, and I know everything is relative, that relatively we are not, in so far as you can generalise, as poor as we were in the 60s?
Yeah, we're not. And I'm sure if when you compare us to medieval Europe, we have a way of life that they couldn't even dream of. But that's not the question. The real issue here is what causes conflict.
Yeah, how do you deal with it? How do we deal with this public? Do you follow me, Lachlan? I know you do. Sorry, this public anxiety, where we're worried about issues that, in one sense, we've no control over. We don't have any control over Trump or Putin.
Like Krishnamurti, that Indian philosopher, he said that, like, we don't fear the unknown. What we really fear is the known coming to an end. And we're at the stage now where the world order, which we've known, is coming to an end. So it's creating huge anxiety in people.
What is this the most significant in terms of the shifting of the tectonic plates? You know the line. Is it the most significant time since the fall of the wall in 1989 and the collapse of the Soviet Union? Or maybe you have to go back further?
Well, I think you have to. First of all, the first issue which you're talking about is nuclear war.
Yeah.
And the amount of times we've come close to nuclear annihilation is probably about five times.
Mm-hmm.
The first major one was the Cuban missile crisis.
Yeah.
Then there was a number of false alarms. It was a Russian in one of the nuclear submarines off Cuba that saved the world because his commander wanted to actually nuke America. He thought that the depth charges that the American ships were dropping were actually nuclear bombs. So it was just somebody was smart enough to say, no, this can't be happening. then they have had incidences that have been reported to us where a nuclear attack came up on all the warning systems in the States mm-hmm. that the Russians yeah. had, and they were actually false. So how many
yeah, and then we have
times can we be lucky?
And remind me of that Russian general who subsequently became famous who refused to launch the missiles because he thought it was, even though he'd been instructed, yeah. he thought it was a mistake, so, and it turned out he was right.
Yeah, so really, I know it's a kind of a joke or a pun, but we're playing Russian roulette when it comes to nuclear arsenals.
Yeah.
And like Hitler kind of put it really well, and he proved it to be true. He said armies don't exist for peace, they exist for triumphant exertion in war. So when people, states build up armies, they intend to use them. They may not consciously intend to use them, but unconsciously they do.
Yeah. But as I pointed out on Friday in a different discussion, Donald Trump was democratically elected in the States. People knew, no one can say they didn't know what Trump stood for in all his aspects of his politics and policies and beliefs and behaviour. But he was democratically elected. Putin wasn't, as we know.
Well, you're making an assumption
okay.
that someone who's democratically elected are they're elected by people who can think for themselves.
Well, what's the alternative?
But Larkin,
what's the alternative?
Well, yeah, I would say that history will say that Donald Trump was elected by money from the tech industry and the mining industry.
You're saying in terms of his campaign, but he was. Every vote was every vote is equal.
In the States, it's who gets the most money, who gets the biggest fortune.
Well, it's also who gets the most votes.
Stay
with us, Larkin. Joe with RT.ie. Richard Jolly. Sorry, Geraldine Bourne. Geraldine, sorry for holding you. 51551 text. How do you deal with this public anxiety, Geraldine, on the eve of destruction?
To quote the song. I remember seeing it in my teens.
Do you? Yeah, yeah.
It isn't so much anxiety for me that I feel. It is anger at impotence. That what I can do as an individual is very, very little.
Okay.
And yes, a democratic election is better, but this one was more publicly bought in the States. Mm. By
since the 50s since the 60s
American elections have been about money for decades.
Well, they've been about advertising and television, especially, and the cost of those advertising. They aren't going around door to door offering people $500 to vote for A, B or C. Like, it still is a democratic election that has the backstop of the Electoral College. That's the way they constructed it there. And what do you do?
Well,
what do you do with this sense of this? What can you do, Geraldine, or can you help us here with this sense powerlessness?
I've been to some of the marches in Ennis to support Palestine.
In Ennis,
a small town in the west of Ireland.
Yeah.
But the main thing that I do, Joe, is I write. I email our own politicians.
Okay.
English politicians,
okay.
European politicians. I write letters to newspapers, and maybe one out of 50 gets published.
Okay.
But once they're gone, once I've pressed the send button, I have no expectations.
Okay, however, it is
literally a physical thing that I can do to hammer out a message. And then,
when you press the send button.
Yeah.
Or indeed go on the demo in Ennis and meet other like-minded people. Does your vague sense of hope, I think you mentioned, does that increase? Do you follow me? Do you say at least I'm trying to do something?
I haven't gone to any of the major marches. Okay. Lots of my nieces
well,
have.
Yes, yeah.
But walking with other like-minded people with the Palestinian flag wrapped around me and a little Palestinian beanie on my head, there is a feeling of togetherness in the face of faraway decisions. And it's better than doing nothing. But just yesterday and today, I feel a slight, you know, a slight candle beam in the darkness because Mark Carney, I think, will square up to the current president.
Effectively, he's an ex-prime minister of Canada because he's been elected to replace the leadership of Trudeau's party. And you think... But why Canada, in terms of an armed, the bigger army obviously than us, they're not a great world power in terms of an army. They are in terms of influence.
Not at all. Yeah, I'm not thinking in terms of Armageddon and world destruction.
Okay.
The two major politicians in this, many of these conflicts. Are Trump and Putin, and I think they're too fond of themselves to want to be blown up.
And when you read
they'd rather
like...
retain power and become richer. And they must have been talking to each other for the last 10 years. Yeah. Don't you think?
I don't know whether do you follow the atomic doomsday clock, Geraldine?
Oh, I do.
And the 2024. This has been going. Since 1945, founded by Albert Einstein and Killian Murphy, Robert Oppenheimer, and this works out, tries to, using scientific methods, insofar as, but there is a bit of guesswork involved, in terms of a nuclear apocalypse, they say we are now 89 seconds to midnight. And that's 1 second closer.
How close was it in the Cuban crisis?
I don't know. But last year it was one second further away. But okay, right. This is what they said. In setting the clock 1 second closer to midnight, we send a stark signal. Because the world is already perilously close to the precipice, a move of even a single second should be taken as an indication of extreme danger and an unmistakable warning that every second of delay in reversing course increases the possibility of global disaster. In regard to nuclear risk, the war in Ukraine, now in its third year, looms over the world. The conflict could become nuclear at any moment because of a rash decision or, as Larkin pointed out there, an accident or miscalculation. Richard Jolly.
Yeah, how you doing?
Is it Jolly by name and Jolly by nature?
Well, I try. It sometimes is very
Help
hard,
us.
Particularly in
Help
particularly
us, yeah.
in the these times.
Yeah.
You know, I was just staying there. I remember the Cuban crisis very well. I was about 11 or 12 years of age.
And just for younger listeners, maybe you want to. The potted history of the Cuban crisis is John F. Kennedy had been elected. He took office, elected in 1960, he became president in January 1961. Mm-hmm. Khrushchev was in the Soviet Union. Cuba had obviously and still is leans toward the Soviet Union with the Castro Revolution, Che Guevara, et cetera, et cetera. And then.
Wanted to put missiles in.
They wanted to put nuclear missiles on
nuclear
Cuba,
missiles,
which
yeah.
to us, to Ireland, would be putting them on the Iron Island, so to speak.
Exactly.
And Kennedy said, please pull back. And it was a standoff. And the ships are heading, and Kennedy is sweating, and Robert Kennedy, his brother.
They had the submarines out there, and they're going
to
blast.
So it was. And even though at that time it wasn't instant news, as you know, Richard, but a lot of people were very worried.
Yeah, I was just making that point, Joe. There was no social media around then. Yeah. As 12-year-old boys, we felt it. We knew it. We knew we were on the eve of something big.
Yeah.
And it scared the hell out of us, I must say, you know? One of your other contributors there was saying that, I'm 75 years of age now, and I don't
And I genuinely mean that. I don't actually worry about myself.
Come closer, come closer. Richard, come closer to the phone again. You're 75.
Sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're 75. Yeah. Are you as worried as you were when you were 12?
No, not at all.
Why?
No, well, I'm not worried for myself. I worry, obviously. I mean, this world is very precious to me, and it should be very precious to a lot of everybody. Yeah. It's our only little place we can live in at the moment. And I'm just so nervous. I mean, my kids used to, they laugh at me now, or they were laughing, but they're not laughing. About a year or 2 years, I was saying, listen, we're in dangerous times. And they say, I'm telling you. And now, as it's getting closer and closer, and there's a line in that song, you know, you don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And this is what's happening with Trump. Trump will tell you. He's saying it every day. Oh, I don't believe in war. I want to stop the killing. And yet he's threatening to bomb Iran. He's allowing Ukraine to be bombed because he's taken away all their fighting blindfolded.
What did
now.
He say over the weekend? What do they expect?
It's unbelievable. And this is a man. This is a man we should be looking up to and looking towards.
But you're saying, you're still saying. Now, tell me and check me. Is it because of your age that you're less worried?
Yeah, I suppose I'm being a bit bravado, really. I mean, I want to be alive for a number of years for various reasons, but mostly for my grandchildren. I mean, our grandchildren came late in life. The eldest is six. And I measure it by communion. I haven't got to communion yet. And then it's confirmation. And that's the way I'm thinking. I know it's strange, but that's the way I'm thinking now. So I want us to hang on. But I'm frightened of what a world it will be
Before the break, Richard, we're even anxious about what will happen 2 days hence in the Oval Office in the White House, even though nothing apocalyptic can happen. Well, this is the most anxious prelude to a Taoiseach going to a social event, which should be a lovely event we've ever been. Okay.
And it's been.
Okay, thanks indeed. That's Richard Jolly. By the way, just going back to Friday's programme, the loose language I used under my breath on Friday was in no way connected to Brian Merriman, who I've known for over four decades. We've never had a bad word for each other, never. I've always known Brian and admired his work in the arts and indeed campaigning for the arts and his good reputation. I just want to again make that clear.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Do you have an old flour sack from Boland's Mills or Johnny Logan's socks he was wearing when he won the Eurovision at Bono's school tie? Next Friday, before the long St. Patrick's Bank holiday weekend, we will be featuring a curator from the Little Museum of Dublin. And he's looking for new objects for display. If you have anything worthy of inclusion, give us a call. We're not looking simply for objects relating to the capital, but anything that tells a story, big, small, quirky, or of significance. Email joe at rt.ie or text 51551 with any of your suggestions. They don't have to be worth anything per se, but tell a story of Ireland. Philomena Keating. You don't want a Shocton Regalia. You just want a day. Why do you want a reduced?
No, well, the thing is, I didn't even know there was a 2 week.
Shocton Regalia,
yeah. Yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't even know it. So I was just suggesting that initially, a day where we could speak a couple of words of Irish to everybody. But I didn't actually know there was 2 weeks. But there you go.
So what are you suggesting?
Well, I'm suggesting that at least on one of the days, perhaps it should be St. Patrick's Day, that we at least try and say, look, I don't have much Irish myself, but I know the odd word and I try and use it every now and then. And maybe we should just do that. Slán, goodbye, Geogich, whatever. Just a couple of words on that particular
and you
day.
Say,
just to emphasize
you
it.
Say folk is a channel it into one single day rather than a miasma of a fortnight.
Or even end it with one, you know, because if you try and do a day some other time in the year, it would take an awful lot of marketing, etc., to get that one day out there. But if we just put it onto St. Patrick's Day, then I think even it's really trying to emphasise people to say just small words like slán. You know, lots of people don't.
But do people not say that? People not. Well, do you not think it is changing that people do?
I agree. No, I think it's great. There's lots of stuff out there. There's RTE, radio. Everyone does loads of different things. Mm-hmm. But we still don't speak it as a nation. And I understand why, because it's just not a day-to-day thing. And if you talk to people who go to Irish schools, I think once they come out, that's it. You know, you're not going to speak it anywhere at all. So I think they lose it after a while. What can we do about that? I don't know. But at least we can, if we can try and emphasise a day or even these 2 weeks. For example, I didn't know there was 2 weeks. Didn't know anything about
The Oliver Collins show, for example, this morning came from the Gael Tochtan. It was about Seacht na Gaeilge. There's a TV reality show on at the minute, isn't it? Including and featuring, among others, Brendan Courtney about learning Irish. Yes. I think it's featured down in the...
Yeah,
the
no, it's all great. Brilliant.
Well, what more do you want?
Well, I just want people to be able to say, you know, to use one or two words. People who don't speak Irish, who are not able to speak it at all, but know a couple of words in Irish, just the normal stuff like slán, and emphasise it maybe on the one day. Just try and get it out there.
But Phil, I mean, do you think there's people that dislike Irish, which is allowed, by the way?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure there is. Yeah, I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is. But then, in fairness, like, we don't use it on a day-to-day basis. Mm. No one knows anything about them. There's some lovely words we can say. I spoke to an Irish teacher one day because he told me to say thank you, say Míle Buíochas. A thousand thanks.
And what was your experience in school, Philomena?
Oh, no, it was grand in school. Yeah, it was. It's a long time ago now, Joe. But yeah, it was grand in school. We came out of school and then we never said anything more.
Well, were you fluent? Were you fluent when you left?
No. No, I wouldn't say that. No, okay. No.
And what has something regenerated or reinvigorated, resurrected?
I suppose someone said to me once, and I suppose it's true, if you live abroad, which I do, I think that it kind of, you emphasise your Irishness much more. You think about it a little bit more. And maybe because I'm older now, I think about it a little bit more. And I just decided I'm going to start speaking a couple of words in the shops, whatever.
Okay.
And I was so surprised at people's reaction.
Which was positive, I suspect.
Yes. They all, you know, said the same thing back to me. Slán, slán laugh, slán awalia, whatever. You know, it was great.
Where's Mara? Mara Blundell. Mara, you started going to the Gaeltacht.
I did. I started going to the Ring Gaeltacht. I think I was about 60, so that's about 6 years ago. So I never went as a child. But when I go there in August every year and I love it. And
I presume one of the reasons you didn't go as a child, same as myself, is that your family couldn't afford it.
They couldn't afford it, no. Yeah. And I do think it would be lovely if every child had the opportunity. And I think it would encourage them to fall in love with the Gaeilge. Because, you know, at that, a teenager, you're going to be falling in love anyway with the people dancing at the Cady or
whatever.
With the
other teenager, hopefully.
Yeah, but for me, it was just a case of falling in love with the area and with the culture and
what,
the
again,
poetry.
Same,
and
same question, Maura Surfer. What prompted you to go to the Gaeltacht at 60? He's still young. What prompted you?
I suppose what prompted me was my youngest son started going to a Gael school Nasson in Harmanstown in Dublin, and parents were encouraged to start learning the Cúpla Focal, and we had a great teacher for the grown ups, the Dini Fáilte, Honor Klein. She's still teaching, and she's brilliant for all the North Sider adults. Okay. And we've it's like another. You know, I feel like I'm living a bilingual life now. Most of my days are 50-50 Irish and English. But I do agree with that lady that says we should speak it more in the shops. And
have you found yourself speaking it more?
No, unfortunately, I speak it with the groups I meet up for coffee and everything. But, you know, I'm not inclined to use it in the shops. I think I'm still nervous about it. I still feel it's not the way we were brought up, and which is sad, really, to think you're, you know, embarrassed about your own language. But unfortunately, that's it. But it has definitely increased my quality of life, being able to use the language more and to get the enjoyment out. But I'd advise anyone, any age, to go to the Gaeltacht. I think it's brilliant.
And when you go, are there other people of a similar age or similar generation?
There's a mixture of ages. People are travelling now from the States and that, and the younger people, they want to learn it. There's people...
Okay, well, that's a good sign, isn't it?
It's brilliant. That's what we need. Brilliant. Like, yeah. Because us older generation are getting, are dying out, I suppose. But and when I was there last year, Brendan Courtney was there making his...
Oh, that's when they made it. Okay.
That's
been broadcast. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And
say them more. Just Tommy Roddy is there. Tommy Joe at rt.ie 51551. You say there's loads of different courses you can do as Gaeilge through your adult life.
Yeah. Dia Gwitch, Yosef.
Duhain.
Yeah. Hosig me eg dull quig wrong on a Govlin Golet. 2.5 years ago,
okay.
I saw something in the local paper about classes in Menlo. Menlo is just on the outskirts of Galway. It's along the River Corrib, and an organisation called Unbrook Her. Now Brook is bank, and Her is east, the east bank, because it's the east bank of the River Corrib. Menlo is actually in the Gaeltacht. There are parts of Galway City, a lot of people may not know this, there are parts of Galway City actually in the Gaeltacht. So you're the likes of Menlo, Ballinfoyle, Trellin. They're in the city, but they're actually in the Gaeltacht. So the purpose of Unbrook Her was to try and bring back the spoken language in, which is still officially a Gaeltacht area. So these classes started, as I said, 2.5 years ago. And the first classes before Christmas of that year, just before Christmas 2022, they were free. So I've had an interest in Gaeilge all my life, and I've done classes at different stages throughout my, I've done them and then I kind of forget about it. But I always had this thing, and I don't know where it comes from. I think it's obviously come from inside me, and I believe that this is actually inside us all. Like your two other speakers there talking about their clear love of the language. I always wanted to be able to speak it, Gaeilge. So I started doing the classes, and we were doing the classes, and I was going, doing them regularly. And then last year, our teacher, Patricia McKeown, I have to mention her because it's Sore Moonshory. She encouraged some of us to actually do the TEG exam. And what the TEG exam is, it's a European standard, Fastest Europe Gaeilge. It's a European-wide standard that was brought in for people learning languages.
Mm-hmm.
And she encouraged some of us, or anyone who really wanted, to actually do the exam. And there are 5 levels in the exam, A1, A2, B1, B2, and C1, starting at the lowest level, which is A1. So we started doing this course, and she runs online courses. She actually has students all over the world on her website, All About Irish, .ie. She put the whole syllabus of this course on her website. And this was kind of separate to the classes we were doing, that we could actually work on this ourselves. And, there were, I think, about 15 or 16 subjects in it, topics. And then we all did the exam. I think there were about 16 of us did it here in Galway then last May. And I got 88% in the A2 exam, Narahogme and Scrudu Egon Tom Shin. August, but along with that, you see,
but is there more? Tommy, is there more? Is there more conversation groups as Gaeilge?
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say, Joe. You see, as well as the classes, there's a Kirkall Cora. There's a Kirkall Cora, which is an Irish circle every week. A few weeks ago then we started a Le Hurucht group. We're actually reading the book Gael and Jory by Donald McAuley. That was actually on the Leaving Cert syllabus a few years ago. I'm not sure if it still is. And there's other activities. Like next Saturday morning, for instance, we're all meeting up in a pub not too far from Menlo, and we're having a breakfast at Skelga. So we'll meet up and we'll have our conversation. And then the following week, we're actually going out to another pub, as it turns out, out in the Gaeltacht Tig Valley, and we're going out for an Iha Kiol, agus Crack, agus Colúder, agus you know, a kind Gaelga. And but there is a greater interest, and I found it interesting there. I think it was your first speaker was saying when she goes into shops. I started doing that myself about a year ago.
Yeah.
And I find actually that the attitude of people now. The second speaker, the second caller, Maura, said that she was nervous about using it in shops. But I find actually, especially with young people, you know, that may have come out of school in recent years, that the attitude towards people is very favourable towards language. Like, for instance, there's a shop in Saltill I go to regularly before I go to the cinema, and I always go in there and I always speak, I always say Dia Gwich, and they'll answer me back now, they'll say Dia Smirigwich, and I'll say Keiki Wiltu, and there are some of them there now, and we'll actually have a little conversation and do the whole thing off Gaelga. And there's one lad there, he actually told me that he had done his Irish, he had got, I think he'd, I forget what it's called now, is it an A1 or a H1 in his Gaelga Honours the previous year? Mm-hmm. And when he started speaking to me, responding to me off Gaelga, I kind of got the feeling that he doesn't use it that often, that even though he had actually got a very good result the year before.
Use it. And that's Philomena's point. Thanks, Tommy. Let me bring Anne McManus in. Anne, you
Good afternoon, Joe.
Good afternoon, Anne.
Yes. Now, I just want to tell you, Rinamisha on Ortesh, Nijay Kuygashok.
57.
I did my Leaving Cert. 57.
1957.
And I'm now 85. I'm
well
now 85.
Well done.
August Trebly and O'Hin, OMA Rash,
Gaji, Oh, well done. So you would have been
2 years. I was
a hooked
O'Doe.
A hooked O'Three.
Nor a OMA Rash.
Yeah.
August Vimek Frastel, Raman, Le Marini Cahan, Mayor Marini Cahan in Knocknacara in. And I couldn't believe, Joe, how the Irish came back to me.
Brilliant. Now, like riding a bike.
Well, yeah, exactly. Rinne me gacrod as gael dan ura vime samyan skali, trochon an ursluk ish ligog, fado. I did every subject, including Latin, in Irish, in the Ursuline Convent in Sligo.
And
I just want to say, you can always revive your Irish, and if you have enough of interest, go for it.
And don't be afraid of it.
Yeah. And it's something unique to ourselves.
Hear, hear. I could have been a Margaret on you. That's Anne McManus in Cundinagalva. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Not only can I safely say that most people in Ireland have crossed Binns Bridge in Dorset Street / Drumcondra in Dublin, because it's the main route into the capital. It's near Croke Park. It's one of the busiest streets in all of the country. I can safely say that most world leaders that have ever visited Ireland have crossed Binns Bridge, because it is on the main road in from Dublin Airport to government buildings. It's the route they use for the Pope, the two popes. It's for JFK, for Richard Nixon, for Ronald Reagan, for George Bush Sr. George Bush Jr. never came. For George Bush Sr. when he was VP, for Joseph Biden, for Barack Obama. They've all crossed Binns Bridge in Dublin, and they've all looked on the, if they're allowed, they would have hopefully seen crowds. But on the right hand side, as you cross Binns Bridge in Dublin, there's a 5-story building, and it's apartments. And one, it's a landmark because of its height. It's higher than most other buildings. It has a beautiful pharmacy on the ground floor and apartments. But the gable wall is completely blank. There's no windows in it. So for some reason and some method, graffiti artists, if that's the word, have managed to climb up on it using, I don't know, ropes, ladders, turntable ladders. And Jerry Cooley, who's a tour guide, Jerry, you're not happy.
How are you doing, Joe? No, I'm not happy. They've translated this into a major canvas for what I call brutal graffiti. It's horrible. Okay. And as a tour guide, you did explain it is the main route in.
Yeah.
And only on Saturday, I had a group coming in from the airport, my first tour of the season
okay.
with the Americans. And I diverted
wow.
at Clonliffe Road, down into Jones's, up Fitzgibbon Street, into Mountjoy, down to Denmark, and then into O'Connor Street, because I knew what was coming down the road. Very, very disruptive on the eye.
But would they spot? Would they spot it, Jerry?
Oh, jeez, they can't miss it. I'm below it.
And does it say anything, or it's just ugly?
It's just ugly scrawl, big sprays
yeah, I know
of
what you're talking
silvers
about. Yeah.
And just stroking around. It doesn't even give a message. And like, while you're on the subject of the Irish shock in the Gaeilge, it's sticking out a mile. That big gable end canvas should be rented from the owners for a nominal fee, euro a year, and put city council in there and say,
cave
meal a fortune road for anybody
out here. Brilliant billboard, because when you go across to the other side of the road, it's also known, I think it's Drumcondra Bridge, Binns Bridge. It was also in the news, don't ask me why, but this is the world we live in, Jerry. It was in the news 6 weeks ago when people people started putting cherry tomatoes on the bridge. And it featured on RTE and it featured in the Indo and the videos, left, right and centre. As I say, don't ask me. So anyway, it's a fairly
famous
bridge.
Well, I would put a call
out
to the graffiti people to start doing the cherry tomatoes instead of the other stuff.
Okay.
But, you know, it gets worse. Like, it's not really, like, that sets the tone for what's coming up in Dorset Street. It is really it's absolutely brutal.
Oh,
I don't know whether
okay.
you've sat in traffic in there in the daylight
for half an hour
coming into Dublin. It's horrible. Like all of the, half of the shops are closed, the mezzanine fronts are pulled down and they're all scrawled with
Dorset Street.
Now look, Dublin in general was gorgeous. Yesterday I was on a hotel in St. Stephen's Green, did a beautiful weekend in Dublin, everybody friendly. So Dublin is not the hellhole that people think it is.
Okay,
but this does not give a good impression of what we think of our city. When we cross Binns
Bridge. How are they doing? Because obviously, it's quite obvious, nothing to do with the owners of the building or indeed the premises.
No, nothing to do with the owners. Actually,
how are they getting up on it?
Ladders.
Oh, are they? Okay.
Yeah, ladders. I was talking to the lads in the tyre shop. That's just below it. Beside the chemist is the tyre shop.
Yeah.
And then another one then, and then onto the canal.
And
where
what are the
ladders. They say the ladders, they come in the middle of the night and they put the ladders up and away they go. But they're everywhere. It's in Dorset Street needs to be defined as the main thoroughfare into Dublin City and give it the attention that it deserves, because it's the only route that you can get in.
Mm-hmm.
And like my people are in the taxi game. My brother Alan is the president of the Taxi Federation, and it's a general accepted route that the taxi drivers won't even go over Binns Bridge. They do the route that I've just done because they're ashamed of it too. The taxi drivers love Dublin and they hate to see it. The minute the wind gets out of your sails the minute you see it. And then it gets worse as you go to Dorset Street and then you'll eventually turn off at the very top where Frank's and the Trophies place, and that's a disaster as well. And then you're down into Cavendish Row and into O'Connell Street. Well, then it all becomes alive again.
See, you asked, if you go across, if you're coming, you're back to the airport, so to speak. If you go across from this awful graffiti you describe, there's a pub on the corner which has a beautiful mural on the wall.
That's right, and that's only recent,
And also, and what the pub have done, if I'm correct, they have,
well, it's not actually on the pub. It's on the wall, but
on the front of the pub, they've actually redone the front of the pub in an old style, beautifully crafted. Sign writing. I actually wrote to them.
I thought
it was so beautiful what they did.
It's lovely.
You're saying that's the exception.
That is absolutely the exception. Now, on the wall just before you get to the Red Parrot on Binns Bridge, that was a disaster like across the way. But somebody, I'm going to say 4 or 5 years ago, got somebody in and painted two beautiful nighttime foxes.
Okay.
40 foot high and 30 foot wide, and they're gorgeous. So what we need to do is replicate something like that on the opposite side, and that will be the catalyst then for moving down through Dorset Street, shop by shop, and say, it doesn't have to happen overnight. And especially with St. Patrick's Week just coming down the road, and we're selling ourselves all over the world, and we're giving the main thoroughfare in from the airport no look at all. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, but I'm thinking...
And there's a huge opportunity. I don't know whether you remember. You're probably too young to remember, Joe. I'm just giving you...
Thanks, yeah.
But there used to be a big sign on Fagans, a big neon sign, a Guinness sign, and saying, welcome to Dublin.
That's right.
But Fagans, the new owners of Fagans, O'Malley, took it down. And that's the type of welcome to Dublin you need to put up on that sign, or up on that big wall.
And Fagan's
there.
Another famous pub.
First thing you see when you come over the bridge.
Bill Clinton has had a point there with Bertie.
And Bertie, yeah. Yeah.
And I think, who else? Tony Blair's had a point there with Bertie. Maybe some advertising. But I'm thinking of, I don't know whether you remember, it was absolutely beautiful in every sense of the word, the image that Joe Cashlan did at the bottom of South Great George Street and Dame Street, just before and indeed after the referendum. And it was there was a beautiful name. Oh yeah, I think it's called Love I'm Certain Of, and it was two men embracing. It was a beautiful piece. A beautiful piece of work in every sense of the word.
Well, that's what we need.
That's what we need. It's about the same size, by the way.
I'm going to use the national exposure I have here with you. I've been on to you once or twice before. And love Dublin and it will love you back.
Okay.
That's a slogan that's come to me. I'm a writer and I'm a tour guide. I'm fond of the words and I love Dublin. Okay. I'm a quintessential
but
Dublin.
Do you get
love
people,
Dublin
here,
and love
here,
you back.
But do you get people remarking on the graffiti? Because if you go to New York, even the trains are in it. The outside of the subway.
Well, that does, well, you see, it doesn't make it acceptable.
Okay.
Well, look, people on the bus, they're on their phones, they don't see it.
Okay.
But when I'm on a coach and it's high up and over Binns Bridge, it's right there in front of you. And it's not as if you're speeding along the way.
Okay,
it's not
I take
something
your point.
That I want to
By
talk
the way, was
with.
It was yeah, it a, was it Americans you had on Friday coming into Ireland?
They came in Saturday morning.
Okay, and how are they? How are they? Are they coming back?
Brilliant.
The age of anxiety, are they coming?
I was teaching them a word, Conasatatu. That was
they're
the saying of it.
Yeah.
And you want to hear their version of it in O'Donoghue's last night.
But are they in good form, Jerry? Are we getting the American tourists back?
Okay. They are in good form.
Okay.
One or two of them are claiming to be Canadians by default. and they're actually questioning. Hey, geez, Jerry, why are these all American flags here? What the hell is wrong here? And I said, look, hey, hold on a second.
There's a lot of
you
American flags,
yeah.
Okay, Jerry Cooley, good to be in the market. That's Jerry Cooley in Dublin. I'm Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Back to the song, The Eve of Destruction, number one 60 years ago this September in the USA, the UK, and number two in Ireland, beaten by the Rolling Stones. But it's about the state of the world and are we on, we are on, Dave, that song, believed, on the eve of destruction with nuclear wars and dishonesty and the prevalence of weapons. Joe Tudia, Joe, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
Where were you in 1963 when the war was...
In 1963, about August 1963, I went on my first ship. I was a deck apprentice. Officer apprentice, I think. And we left Liverpool. Dad put me on board. And we didn't come back. I didn't come back home to Kinsale for 12 months later.
Okay.
But I listened with interest. The comments before, and I wouldn't demean any one of them. They're so fascinating.
Okay.
I'm just as nervous about the future as they are. I wanted to say that there was conflict in 1963 everywhere. You know, it's a young fella. Not that I fully understood
like
all
where,
going
like
on.
Where? Where? There was a threat of nuclear war.
Our first port, my first port of call was Venezuela, and we loaded there for back and forth Curacao and the Gulf States, ports like Mobile, Alabama, but around then, and I suppose it took the only other Irishman on board was the radio officer, Sparks, a man called Dunleavy from Dublin.
Yeah.
He'd kind of explain what was going on in Nicaragua and Guatemala and that wretched murder of the bishop there. But the amount of killing that was going on then. So that was only part of our trip. And but we there was nothing in the papers. You know, I'd write home and we'd get to Mobile, Alabama. I remember we had an incident, Sparks and I, with two Irish guys. We went to Mass coming home and we went into a Woolworths store and where there's two young black girls on there in the soda fountain bar. And we went in innocently but were pulled out of there very quickly because Woolworths were allowing integrated bar, you know. So all this was occurring to a 16-year-old just out of Clash to Crease 3, you know, in Cork.
But I still don't think we were on the... if you're thinking about the bishop being murdered in El Salvador, that was in the... Was that not the 80s? But you think, in terms of the age anxiety, are you saying now we're not in it at the minute?
We are. We are, of course, and it's more anxiety. But I think that the social media, the amount of that, you know, you look at a newsstand now in any shop and you read the papers there, and it's just awful.
Okay.
You go and look at the reports, the graphic reports.
Well, I'm
now
just you've hit a nerve there, Joe, because Philip Smith. Philip, good afternoon. You say you try and avoid the news at this stage, even though you're a news fiend.
Oh yeah. No, I've always a news fiend, but
okay.
Just the last, since Trump was elected, and particularly since he took over, it's just I suppose we're in a particular groove of what we expect to happen. I mean, I know the Americans have made terrible mistakes, but they were kind of on the side of the good guy, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
But now that's all gone. That's all changed, you know. And it's so, so unpredictable, you know.
And is it not? But the unpredictability, in one sense, he was elected and people knew what they were electing.
Oh, they did.
He didn't suddenly.
I'm not so sure they did.
Okay.
Or if they really cared, I mean. They say in America it's the economy and all that really and truly international affairs maybe doesn't matter all that much to them in general. I don't know, but they did elect them, and I suppose we have to accept that.
Okay.
But,
stay with us, Philip, for time. Back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe is in Donegal. Joe.
Yes, Joseph.
The Cuban missile prices. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was, I think, eight or nine.
Yeah.
And like the trepidation that was in the country, it was on a national basis. There were rosaries being said. There were statues being put out. People were on edge. I don't think there's the same sense of trepidation today that there was then.
Okay. What is that? Because we're a different society? We wouldn't generally organise prayer vigils if we were worried. You would in those days, wouldn't you?
Yeah. There was, but this was in every house. Like, it was, you could feel the tension at home. And there was... Put on the news, and you were there, and you were listening to Charis Mitchell or Morris with Hardy, and like, you know, you wanted to hear this. What is happening?
Well, then let me.
Not alone when you're praying, we're praying for Kennedy as well in America.
But is it now that? Well, in fairness, maybe one positive as somebody just pointed out to me on the line there. Putin and Trump are probably on the same side now. They weren't, the USA and the USSR weren't in 1963 or the 1960s, but the Cold War came, and they have the biggest nuclear arsenals, both of them, and China, of course. But Carmel O'Brien, Carmel.
Hi, Joe.
I go back to the Eve of Destruction. That's the song. You say there's another song.
Well, the Universal Soldier, I sing both of them, and I still sing them now and again because they're so relevant, you know?
Okay,
the words of the Eves of Destruction are so scary today.
Well, tell me about the lyrics, if you can remember them, of Universal Soldier.
Buffy, I can't remember
Buffy
them. Buffy Samurai,
Buffy Samurai, yeah.
He's 5'3", 6'4", he's fighting for missiles and with spears. He's all of 21, but he's only 17, being a soldier for 1,000 years. I mean, what is he saying is that without the soldiers, you know, and they're the people who are getting killed, you know, just because somebody decides to go to war, you know. I mean, it's scary, really, Joe. You know, and I could still sing Eve of Destruction, every single word of it now, this minute. And that's 60.
If the Universal Soldier you're referring to are per your lyrics there, he's 5'2", 6'4", that's a Donovan song, my memory
is. Yeah.
He's all of 31, he's only 17, he's been a soldier. Donovan is, what a genius. And Donovan, as you know.
Absolutely. I mean, all those folk songs were amazing. They were amazing, and the words of them are just so true now.
But are they frightening?
They are, yeah. They're frightening to me now, whereas back then, I think your young brain didn't sort of take them in, you know. I didn't, anyway.
Yeah, let's listen to another minute of this song that started the program, the Eve of Destruction, 60 years ago, number one, and is more relevant today than ever. And these are just some of the lyrics, and it's by a fella called Barry Maguire, and he's still alive. Okay, that's Eve of Destruction. At this rate, we might get it back to number one. The way people are reacting. Sound, James Feeney, BCO, Shane Galvin, producer Rachel Graham. Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Elevate your bedroom with our fresh new bedding designs and colours, in store and online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.